Now, I may be the leader of this house, but the undisputed speaker of my house is my wife, Kelly. And I'm sure serving as your speaker will undoubtedly will be one of the most greatest achievements of my life. But the greatest honor and achievement of my life is being the father of Courtney and Corinne. My parents taught me at a young age the importance of honesty, kindness, integrity, compassion. They've always been my biggest fan. They believed in me when I found it most difficult to believe in myself. Please welcome my parents, Everett and Bonnie Tilley and Linda David Wolf. And last, but certainly not least, my role model, my best friend, my big brother, Jason. I would like to start with sharing with you a story that only my family members know. As an 18-year-old college freshman, I was pretty immature. Perhaps some of you can relate. I was a little more focused on extracurricular activities than I was academics, and my grades reflected this. My mom once pointed out to say my academic achievement was less than stellar would have been a historic understatement. However, as time passed, and with the help of my wife, I matured and realized that if I wanted to amount to anything, if I wanted to fulfill my potential, I had to get serious about school. And so I did. In my last 3 years of undergraduate, I excelled academically. In October of 1993, I applied to optometry school. It's very competitive to get in professional school with really only one slot for every 10 applicants. And although I'd done quite well in my undergraduate the last 3 years, my lack of focus early on brought my grade point average to a less than impressive number. But I always believed in my heart that if I could just get an interview, I could explain how much I've matured, how hard I would work, how much I would learn, if they would just give me a chance to be an asset to the profession of optometry. However, November and December passed, no interview. January and February passed, still no interview. As March approached, the last month for interviews, I sat down with my father, and he suggested I go visit a respected optometrist just south of us. This was a doctor who is recognized as a leader in our profession for a generation. I called this distinguished optometrist, and he agreed to meet with me, so I drove to Crothersville to ask for his help. After hearing my story, he agreed to make a call on my behalf, and to make a long story short, I got an interview. The University of Missouri St. Louis accepted me, and the rest is history. Without being accepted to optometry school, I wouldn't be a doctor. I probably wouldn't have found my way in the Missouri House. And I most certainly wouldn't be standing before you as your speaker. That man was Dr. Terry Swinger. We all know him as one of our colleagues from the Missouri House of Representatives, Representative Swinger. As I reflect on my past, with the exception of my family, Representative Swinger is the individual who's had the most profound, positive impact on my life. And I just want to stand here today and from the bottom of my heart say thank you. But the reason I wanted to share this story is because we can all learn a valuable lesson from Representative Swinger. When I was a young man who needed help, when I was a young man who needed someone to believe in me, he didn't look at me as a Republican or a Democrat, especially not a future speaker. He looked at me as a person. And as we embark on this legislative session, let's not look at one another as Republicans or Democrats, but rather as normal, dedicated citizens working to make this a better place to live, work, and raise a family. We're not always going to agree, not even within our own party. But we must agree to not let partisanship get in the way of good ideas. Within this story, there's also a challenge. And it's a challenge I'm placing before all of you. Dr. Swinger took a chance on a young man, maybe because I was a local kid, or maybe because he thought I could become an asset to the profession, but he definitely set an example as a role model that I have not forgotten. And in return, I hope as a young man, I was able to set that same example, that it's all right to believe in people, that we should have faith in one another, and we should always hope for the best. So my challenge is this, that we all, in our entrusted positions, lead by example. As Republicans, we now control the largest majority, one of the largest majorities in our 200-year state history. Because of that, it is my belief that we have the greatest responsibility in leading by example. From the book of Luke, when someone has been given much, much will be required in return. And when someone is entrusted with much, even more shall be required. Missourians have entrusted us with the power of state government. And Missourians have been clear. They want, they need, and they deserve a change in a culture of how we operate. Missourians want legislative leaders who live by the same rules that they do. So as your speaker, I have a great deal of responsibility, and therefore the largest role in leading by example. However, we don't always have to lead by legislating. As elected officials, our goal shouldn't always be to create more laws, but to institute better principles, a change of attitude, and a willingness to challenge the status quo. As your speaker-elect, I believe all of you have seen firsthand my willingness to challenge the status quo. To accept the way things have always been done as the way they always should be done, to me, is unacceptable. My first change, for the first time ever, an incoming speaker was naming our intended chairman more than a month in advance. We followed that by assigning committees to all members, both Republicans and Democrats, before session started. The reason was so that when this gavel fell, each of you could be focused on your issues and getting down to the business for the people of Missouri. Second, I took the historic step of naming three Democratic chairmen to substantive committees because I believe in the fundamental principle that people should be chosen by chairmen, not by which party they run under, by the qualities by which they possess. Missouri families face difficult times. Unemployment hovers at over 9%. These families have been forced to tighten their belt. We will also have to make more cuts here in the Missouri legislature, so we must lead by example. Together with Minority Leader Talboy, our combined leadership teams have identified savings of more than 10%, and in my office, over 15%. I applaud our Republicans as well as our Democrats in working together to move this state in the right direction. This year, we will prove to the citizens of this state that government can and will tighten their belts and can and will do more with less. Another example of challenging the status quo will come very soon when we are approving the House rules by which we all operate under. Within this set of rules, you will see several distinct changes, one of which removes partisan control from committees and reinstitutes the power of the minority leader to appoint his chosen members to a committee. The expansion of special committees was done under Republican control. It limited the power of the minority. It was wrong, and I'm going to fix it. In addition, working with Budget Chairman Sylvie and the Appropriations Chairs, we will move to require cost containment plans from every state department. Departments must realize that we want to work together with them to improve efficiency, not just hear requests for more dollars. Further, I'm ready to grant a subpoena power to the Budget Committee to help root out waste, fraud, and abuse. These are just some small changes, but they show Missourians that we are willing to lead by example, to committed to getting beyond the business-as-usual mentality, and a willingness to challenge the status quo. However, it will take more than this to get our state on the right track. As a citizen, I'm convinced that government cannot be the solution to every problem. But as a legislature, we need to do everything within our power to make sure the government's not the problem either. Today, I would like to lay out a plan called the Show Me Solutions Initiative. The principles of this plan are built on the principles by which Missourians expect us to govern: limited government, fiscal prudence, individual freedoms, personal responsibility, but it's also grounded in common sense. These are also ideas that are not entirely new, but with the change in focus, I believe they are completely achievable, because when we talk to Missourians across the state, their call has often been to show me solutions. There are five key components that I see are vital to our progress. The first is merely a pledge to the voters to tell them that we heard them loud and clear. We will force government to live within its means, we will balance our state budget, and we will hold the line on taxes, period. Second, our top priority must be job creation. But let me be clear, government doesn't create jobs. Entrepreneurs, small business owners, and large employers do. Government's role isn't to run the economy. It's merely just to facilitate a business climate that allows the entrepreneurial spirit to thrive. But to create a better economic environment for all job creators, businesses must have a peace of mind that they will not be hampered by new regulations, by new fees, taxes, or frivolous lawsuits. If we achieve that, they can create jobs. Therefore, our plan calls for a moratorium on any regulation, fee, or new tax for small businesses. However, we also want to take a significant step in reducing and eliminating unfair lawsuits that threaten the viability of good, honest businesses. And that includes providing protection to our Missouri family farmers. Third, bring more accountability to government. For instance, if someone wants to take a Missouri driver's license, I think they should pass it in our official language, and that language is English. And as law enforcement personnel conduct citizenship verifications, why don't we cross-reference those individuals with a sexual predators list? And finally, we have to acknowledge as a state that human trafficking occurs in our state, and in its worst cases involves the sexual trafficking of children. Let us send a clear message to these worst of the worst that Missouri will not tolerate it and that no punishment is too severe. In Missouri, I believe we can also reach for greater accountability from the federal government. So we will work on a federal repeal resolution to band with other states to reject out of touch, out of control, and policies outside the federal government's authority. Fourth, education. I believe in the fundamental principle that every child deserves a world-class education. And it shouldn't matter if you're a Caucasian kid from Perryville, an African-American child from St. Louis, or a Hispanic child from Kansas City. I've asked my incoming education chair, Scott Dickhouse, to focus not on what's best for administrators, to focus not on what's best for teachers' unions, but instead the novel idea of focusing on what's best for our children. Therefore, we need to pass teacher tenure reform that will reward good teachers but provide local school districts with more control. We also need to consider adopting policies to address social promotion. We are doing our children an injustice by merely passing them along if they can't pass minimum standards. And last, use responsibility and free market concepts to expand and increase quality health care. Listen, Missourians are compassionate people. We're willing to give people a hand up, but that's far different than a handout. Missourians are interested in helping people out of a bad situation. Missourians have no interest in funding a bad habit, and that's why we need to pass drug testing for welfare recipients this year. In Congress, they believe the first 100 days are essential to establishing progress. However, in the Show Me State, I believe we should set our standards higher. And so my last challenge, as well as yours, is that we shoot for success in our first 50 days. So then in the first 50 days of session, the House will have passed 75% of its priorities. And finally, in closing, I want you to take this into consideration. There's roughly 6 million people in Missouri. Only 163 of us get the honor and the privilege to serve in the House of Representatives. We all have a unique but fleeting opportunity to make a difference in the lives of citizens all across the state. A few months back, I sat down with my father, and he said, "Don't waste this opportunity." He told me I had a choice. As Speaker, I could hop in a boat, float downstream, not make any waves, and let the river of history take me through the paths of least resistance. And then, at the end of the ride, having not accomplished much, I could just be glad I was Speaker. Or I could hop out of that boat, create some waves, and chart a new course for this state. I'm choosing to chart a new course for this state, and I'm asking each and every one of you to chart that course with me. I believe that we can build a better future for our children, and I need your help to do that. May God bless you, may God bless your families, and may God bless the great state of Missouri. Thank you.